You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology with your hosts, Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 262 of the Shared Security Show. I'm your host, Tom Esten, and today we have a real international affair on our hands. Now, joining me in his virtual studio, all the way from the Sunshine State, we have Kevin Johnson, who's probably still wearing flip-flops and sipping on a margarita as we speak.
Are you drinking?
No, you don't drink.
I have a Limoncello LaCroix.
So it's not a margarita. Okay.
Not a margarita. Okay. Not a margarita.
And from the Great White North, we have Scott Wright, who's probably bundled up in 10 layers of clothing and drinking maple syrup out of a jug.
Sounds like a ChatGPT intro.
I don't know what you're talking about. But together, Kevin and Scott and I will be discussing the latest in security news and sharing a few laughs along the way. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some serious fun on today's episode of The Shared Security Show.
The best part about that intro was it wasn't written by ChatGPT. Tom hired a day laborer from Home Depot and had them write it.
No, that was from Fiverr. Yeah.
Fiverr. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Day laborer from Fiverr.
No, it was really from ChatGPT. Yeah. I love it. I just love it. I'm sorry.
You can waste so much time with it, can't you?
Are you gonna sign up for the pro version?
Was like $45 a month or something ridiculous?
42.
42?
42. And it's, yeah. I only remember that because,
you know, 42. Yes. And, the best number in the universe, of course.
Yeah. Do you know why? Do you know why 42 was the answer in Douglas Adams' book, supposedly? So I say supposedly.
Because it's 6 times 7. That's why.
Nope.
Oh.
It is. I had to think about that for a second. I'm like, wait, it is 6 times 7. You're right. Nope, that's not the answer.
Okay.
What's the answer?
Douglas, supposedly. I'm repeating something I read on the internet, and we all know everything on the internet's true. Supposedly, it's because Douglas Adams was a nerd. And 42 is the ASCII value for an asterisk or the wildcard character.
That is pretty nerdy.
Let me be very clear. Even if that's not true, I'm going to pretend it is. Like, I don't know if it's true. It's
pretty believable. Yeah.
So, well, we are all back this week, obviously. Best of episode. Last week, I think, I did the old Social Zombies Revisited because I just felt like, you know, it's time. It's time to
go back
bring
12 or 13 years.
Social Zombies back. Yeah. But you know what's funny, though, is like I listened to the whole talk again while I was editing for that episode. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like nothing has changed since 2009 with social networks. Yeah. It was just kind of ironic.
What I had somebody reach out to me. They watched that episode. And they wanted to know where, like they were confused. They did not realize it was an old video.
Isn't that crazy? I know.
How did I miss that conference?
Everything was 12 years old. Wait, like, why didn't you tell us?
DEFCON 17. Aren't we past like more than 17? What's going on?
What was the last one? 30?
Yeah. Yeah. So
Tom World.
Anyway. So we do have some, I think, fun stories this week. And first, we are talking about how a hacker has discovered a copy of the U.S. no-fly list, which, as you know, has, you know, names of people that have been banned from traveling in or out of the U.S. on commercial flights. And it was found, of course, on a surprise, surprise, unsecured Jenkins server connected to a I think like a smaller airline, right?
It was, commuter airline.
This is just a fascinating story. Like, so I don't know if you read like the post that this guy, he goes by Miaya Arson Crime W. Like, what?
Definitely a respectable security researcher.
I guess he found this while just like messing around with Shodan. We've talked about Shodan on the show before. Yeah. It's a great search engine to find, you know, these servers just connected to the internet. But I guess there was also a large amount of company data too about the airline released, right?
If you read, see, I find this interesting. If you've ever listened to me speak about security researchers, criminals, and things like this, I have mixed feelings that are mostly not.
Let's call them mixed. But yes.
I have a little bit of mixed feelings, right? Yes. Like, look, they have this vulnerability. You found it. You notified them. Blah blah blah. When I read the post by, I guess,
My arson crime W.
I don't even know where you come up with that, right? That sounds like they were in LastPass and they said, generate a password. And that's my username.
It's very possible. Yes.
But if you read what they posted, the thing that really raised the hackles on my neck, for the lack of a better phrase, is how many times the person says something along the lines of, oh, but this wasn't impressive enough, so I kept looking for more stuff so the reporter would write about it. And the impression I left with was I wanted to be famous, and so I kept pushing until I found something that could get me attention. And that, to me, is harmful to our industry. That is actually, like, for the people who are really security researchers, that people who are really trying to help organizations be more secure and stuff like that, this person is undermining them, because this person explicitly is saying, they kind of, we want them to be more secure, but I want the reporters to listen to me. So, hey, reporters. And then I looked further to get information that would be juicy, and they, oh, well, I know the reporter would like this. And that, to me, look, I'm not even going to, I'm not, you know, you want to think that, you want to feel that way, if that's your goal, don't put it in writing, you know, like, at least pretend to be trying to help the industry. I'm not excusing what Commute Air did.
Yeah.
They screwed up their security. They did something bad. They revealed sensitive information. What I'm actually more worried about is not the no-fly list. I'm more worried about all of the staff and customers of that airline,
yes,
whose data is also probably exposed, right?
I'm
worried about the risks of those things. We got a whole bunch of people on the no-fly list. That's interesting. And I think it's bad for those people that they're on the list or whatever. I don't know. I don't know why. I'm not on the list because I fly. But I think what bothers me so much about this is every bit of it was an attention-seeking narcissism instead of a, man, we have a serious problem here that we need to help with.
Yeah.
That's part pisses me.
I agree with you. It reminded me of those incidences we've had of stunt hacking.
Yes.
Remember we had like a rash of those for a couple of years where, you know, security researchers again, and some like big names too, were saying how they could crash airliners and stuff. And
flew the aircraft sideways.
Yeah. Just crazy stuff. But
I'm actually doing a keynote upcoming in Denver at a Snowfrock. And the keynote is actually about our industry. It's based on a Malcolm Gladwell podcast. Weak Link, Strong Link.
Interesting.
Sports.
Yeah.
And we as an industry act as if we are a strong link industry, but we're really a weak link industry.
Yeah.
We all have to get it right. We all have to work together. We all have to build each other up. And crap like this builds up one person at the expense of everybody else.
Yep. And that's all in the name of fame.
Yep.
That's right.
And that is the opposite of what we should be doing.
I agree.
And I know how hypocritical that may sound from somebody who is sitting on a podcast and going to do a keynote and presenting. You know what I mean? Like, I will acknowledge that sounds hypocritical, but I'd like to believe that I do those things to help people, to educate people, not to get a reporter to write about me.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerks.
no comments from you, Scott?
Well, I think it's very similar to other things we've seen before and reported on, right? They didn't – I don't know that it was so much hacking as just stumbling across something in an open website. And, you know, the implications of it are certainly concerning, I guess. But I don't think that it's much really new in terms of how we need to be concerned, right? It's the same stuff, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. He didn't find a new vulnerability. I will say it is more hacking than just stumbling across something.
Oh, was it? Okay.
He did stumble across something, but then he took the information. I think it was a Jenkins server. He took the information from the Jenkins server to then laterally move into the company and through the company, right? So he did. It isn't as simplistic as I found an S3 bucket and it had sensitive data
right,
in it.
Right.
Oh, okay. It was, I found this, digging through this, I found secret credentials, mm-hmm. whatever. And then I went further and, you know, the person, yeah. they outline in too much detail, the too much being the talking about the reporter stuff, how much they moved through. And so I will agree with you that nothing the person wrote about was novel,
right?
Unique,
yeah, right.
Right. Right. But bluntly, very rarely are any of these.
Yeah, that's true.
Novel now, or unique.
What I think is maybe a little more interesting to talk about is the privacy issues and, you know, public safety issues around releasing a list of no fly, you know, people. But
that's, we could also talk about, you know, no fly list is a U.S. thing, and the U.S. has a this pesky concept of innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. And so what they've basically done is published a list of people that are guilty before they were proven innocent.
Well,
right. And I'm not saying these people shouldn't be on this list. I don't know how the people got on the list.
Did they actually publish the list is the first question. Or did they it's on the list.
My understanding is yes.
The list is out there now.
The list is public.
I actually heard it was not published, at least by the people who found it. They made a little bit of responsible disclosure in terms of not saying, hey, I found this, fix the problem. It's, hey, I found this. If you are feeling oppressed because you've been on a no fly list for bad reasons, then contact me and maybe I can help you. I don't know. It just seemed like it was a weird way to disclose what was found.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, let's move on to our second topic, which is everyone's favorite segment, Aware Much?
Yes, indeed,
Tom. I love how you say that.
It is time for Aware Much. It seems like there are three kinds of people in the world these days. There's those who feel like ChatGPT represents a turning point, especially for security. And then there's those who think it's overblown. And then there's those who don't care or don't know. So if you asked me 3 months ago, you know, what I thought of, you know, the impact of AI on cybersecurity, I probably would have said, you know, well, it's going to be hard for anybody to really leverage AI in a way, you know, when we can't really get two servers to talk to each other intentionally, you know,
right.
So I was a little bit skeptical, but you know, what I've seen with ChatGPT, I've done, you know, enough reading and research. I haven't actually explored doing attacks like you guys probably have. But I've read a lot about it, and I find some really interesting articles, including one we're going to talk about today from Vice, that shows, you know, some pretty significant, I think, ways that people have been or that attacks have been created using GPT and specifically phishing attacks. And it was done in a way that was, you know, creating compelling subjects and topics that it really would be something that we would worry about people clicking on. But what's even more interesting is a couple of other articles I found too that were in the area of showing how easy it is for, you know, what we would have called script kiddies. I'm now calling chat kiddies because you can really just pick up, you know, go into ChatGPT and say, tell me how to, you know, swipe a mm-hmm. password file and whatever. So we're going to get people. And I think it's going to change the methodologies used in hacking, but I don't think it's actually ultimately going to change a lot. And that's probably what Kevin feels. I'm just predicting maybe that's.
Well, I mean, I have a mixed feeling about it. If I could paraphrase Kevin, honestly, like, I mean, our friend Katie, right, just released that that had some quotes from you and I, Kevin, in there. And, you know, it's very similar to like malicious code that's being written by ChatGPT. Like, what's the big deal? Like, everybody's been writing malicious code for years, and all of a sudden a bot's doing it, and it, in some cases, not very well. I don't know. I don't see it
as getting better.
Yeah, right. It's
interesting. I think it will improve. Obviously, that's the whole idea of machine learning, is it's going to learn, hopefully, from, you know, feedback and whatever other inputs it gets.
It should get better, right?
But I think
I actually disagree with what you think I was going to say. I actually think AI and ML is going to be a massive shift for what we do as an industry. And the reason is, and I've said this before, right? The vast majority of what we do, whether it's as a SOC, whether it's as incident response, whether it's as threat hunting or as pen testing or whatever, most of the stuff we deal with is low-hanging fruit.
Yes, I completely agree.
Yeah. And the ability to have something, I hope you hear the quotes in italics around this, but intelligently filter that stuff. Right.
Yeah.
To sort, categorize, and then hand it to experts. Right. I think that's going to be massive. I don't think it's there yet.
Oh,
right.
Don't get me wrong. I do agree with that completely. And that's why I say mixed, like my feelings, because I do think it's a game changer. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know you do. Scott just said that he thought I was going to say I didn't think it was.
Yeah, for some reason I thought you were going to say it's not changing fundamentally how we do attacks.
No, actually think if we pay attention to it instead of paying attention to the hype.
That's what I mean. It's overhyped.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we pay attention to it, it will be a game changer. And I think it will be a game changer largely to the good. Right. When you talk about organizations, you know, what is it? The OWASP Top 10 has for thousands of years told us that logging and monitor, maybe not that long.
The ancient Egyptians told us that injection was bad.
At the bottom of the pyramids were their SOC, and they were analyzing the SQL injection,
that's right,
the Ramsey injection. And that logging and monitoring is thing. And when we talk to organizations, you know, time and time again, as we do tests and try to work with the organization to see if they detect us and what have you, that's where they fall down the most, right? Having something like a machine learning trained system that will say, hey, that looks weird, you might want to go check that, instead of overwhelming the staff, you know, that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I totally agree. It's going to be a big help. On the other hand, I always, for the last 10 years, I've kind of tried to convey my thoughts on something I call the convenience vulnerability paradox, right? The more convenient we make some technology or some process, the more opportunity there is for the bad guys to use, you know, that or to find at least a different vulnerability that is now available because of it. Right. And so clearly there are people using, you know, ChatGPT to do great things, you know, whether it's marketing emails or doing business strategy based on, you know, historical demographic data. That's all great. It's going to be probably, as you said, Kevin, more good than bad, but it really does provide a really powerful tool for attackers now to, you know, do things that we haven't yet figured out how to stop people from doing, like clicking on links or falling for scams. So, this has been brought to you by ClickArmor, the fully gamified platform for cybersecurity awareness. And I don't really have a pitch for ClickArmor today, but I think I just wanted to invite people to our continuing series of cybersecurity awareness forums. It's actually growing. We had a really good talk this past week on what was it on? It was on cyber insurance. And so I wasn't sure how long we'd be able to talk about cyber insurance and security awareness, but we did for a full hour. So everybody stayed on. So they're really fun. We have various people from different security realms, and everybody just has an interest in security awareness. So it's fun, and we get live audience Q&A. Hoping to grow that audience. So please come and join us. You can sign up at clickarmor.ca/CSAF for Cybersecurity Awareness Forum.
And I'm really disappointed, Scott.
Why?
I thought you were going to say click armor. We're not artificially intelligent. We're really intelligent.
Oh, I love this. This is the new tagline.
Yeah. Well, actually, I will. There is one thing, other thing I wanted to say about AI. As we automate everything that is, as Kevin calls, the low-hanging fruit, right?
Yeah.
We automate the low-hanging fruit. What does that leave for the average employee as part of their job, right? You know, certainly people are concerned that they're going to lose their jobs, but the jobs actually just end up having more important decisions to be made that weren't.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. And because of that, I believe we need better risk decision-making capabilities, and that's what Click Armor is about.
So scientists from Carnegie Mellon University have developed a way to sense humans through walls using a deep neural network called DensePose that maps Wi-Fi signals to UV coordinates, which is when a 3D model surface is projected to a 2D image for mapping a computer-generated image. They actually used Wi-Fi routers to do this and didn't use any type of expensive or, you know, high-tech technology like LiDAR and stuff that's in your Roomba, right?
I find it hilarious. I sent you this article.
Yes, you
I
did.
Thought it was interesting. Yeah. And then when you just read back the title of it to me in the way you read it back, I'm even more interested now. You added some spice or something.
Some je ne sais quoi.
Good. Yeah, I can't say that word, that phrase. I barely speak English. Okay.
Yeah.
And, but like you made me more interested in the topic.
Now so it's more interested. Much. Yeah. Good. Yeah, here to help.
I think this is hilarious. I want to be very clear. I was talking to, I think it was Nathan about this. And Nathan's like, this isn't that big a deal. Like they're like, okay. And to paraphrase the article, right? They figure out a way that with wireless signal measuring the wireless signal, they can tell where somebody is standing, where they're facing, what pose they're in, right? All that kind of stuff. And Nathan's response to me was, yeah, but like, cause I said, you know, I expect Walmart to roll this out. and he said, but they already have cameras. They already have this. Like, what does this give them? And here's why I think this is important. If you look at privacy regulations and privacy requirements and people worried about, people focus on facial recognition, taking videos, taking photos, things like this. Picking on Walmart just because we know that Walmart has put a lot of effort publicly into tracking where people are in the store. Disney World. You go to Disney World.
Disney?
Anywhere you're standing,
it's crazy.
They know where you are.
Yep.
Right?
Like, at all times.
And so I expect Disney to roll this out. Because here's the thing. As we become, as a society, as a world, as a whatever, more aware of privacy, more aware of people's concerns about privacy, these organizations like Walmart and Disney aren't going to want to stop knowing where you are. And bluntly, I like when I go to Disney that they know where I am. Because
you know how long you're waiting in line too, like those wait times. Waiting, that's how that's all done.
Adjust things,
yep.
But they also know what things I like at the park, so there is less chance of them retiring 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and Wild Toads Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Yes, two rides they retired here in Orlando, but they were my favorite. Right. So they would know, right? They would know where I was. So I like that, but. As they push and the government says, oh, video cameras are bad because of privacy, you're not allowed to do facial recognition, like the article we talked about, was it last week, the week before, about the lady in New York, the lawyer in New York. Okay, so you can't do facial recognition. Great. Then I'm going to put this DensePose thing. I can't see your face. All I can see is what you're doing. But we also know that biometrics like gait matter.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so now we have, this is that case where I always say, and I know Tom, you say it often as well, you know, the law tries to do a good thing, but then they're either more specific or too loose. So they ban facial recognition, they roll this out, and the organization still knows it's Kevin walking around the store. They still know it's Kevin that's looking at that shelf or whatever, right? That's where I think this is fascinating, is the privacy ramifications of what, if you look at it at surface, is actually an anonymized thing.
Just like a giant fingerprint.
Right. Yep. But it's actually a giant fingerprint. That's a perfect way to say it, right? Is it look when you look at the pictures in the article, when you look at the pictures in the white paper, it's like, oh yeah, it's a scatter plot that looks vaguely human, right? But the reality is that information is still available. That's the part I'm interested in. That's the part
that is. And you can't revoke it, really.
No.
No.
No. Well, I mean, I can gain a lot of weight. I did that. I'm working on going the other way now. I'm trying. But yeah, that's the part, I think. This is augments the technologies that there are efforts to remove. I think that's the key point that we need to think
That's about. A good point. Yep.
I don't know that I'm right, but that's,
oh, it's a good
that's
one.
Where I focus.
I like it.
Yep. Yep. Very good.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I think we have to let you get back to you drinking margaritas, Kevin, and Scott, you drinking maple syrup out of a jug.
Yeah.
So, I don't think I've ever had a margarita. Now that you bring that up, I've had pina coladas.
I love margaritas. I have them all summer.
Maybe I should move to Florida. It's an ice drink, right?
Yeah. It's tequila, like lime juice. It's
tequila, triple sec, and lime.
Yep.
And a bit of salt.
It's pretty simple.
I prefer double sec.
Yeah. But the boom. Oh, wait. Do I have a? No, I don't. I only have crowd laughing. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
You've got one of those stream decks, don't you?
Yeah, it's within Zencaster here. Yeah. I got all kinds of stuff. Dramatic piano.
Oh, that is dramatic piano.
Very dramatic.
Yeah. I feel drama overflowing.
Yes, I know.
Next time we have a breach story, we'll have to
do that.
Have the background.
I'll get more creative with that, guys. But till next time, we will talk to all of you again next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app, or leave us a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the show, visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter at SharedSec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.